Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the humanitarian disaster in Syria brought on by the Assad government's deliberate policy of starving its own population under siege in Homs, Aleppo, and parts of Damascus. Nada Hashemi, the director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Denver and co-author of The Syria Dilemma, joins us to discuss his article in the New York Times, Use Force to Save Starving Syrians, and efforts underway to deliver food and allow civilians to escape that has resulted in the detention by the Assad regime of hundreds of men and boys who the United Nations aid agencies are deeply concerned about. Then we'll examine the catastrophic ice storms hitting the south in the context of increasingly extreme weather events happening across the globe. Peter Ward, a paleontologist who teaches biology and earth and space sciences at the University of Washington, joins us. He has studied mass extinctions, almost all of which have been brought about by climate change, and his latest book is The Flooded Earth, Our Future in a World Without Ice Caps, which we will discuss along with the connections between extreme droughts in Australia, floods in England, and ice storms in Atlanta, Georgia. Then finally, we'll speak with the author of a new book that reads like a nail-biting thriller, but is in fact a definitive account of the Fukushima disaster, from the tsunami to the nuclear catastrophe, which continues to this day with areas of the devastated plant no human can go near, as every day hundreds of tons of water pour on to cool the melted cores, and radioactive water crosses the Pacific from Japan to Malibu, California, where the kelp beds are being measured for radiation. One of the nation's top independent experts on nuclear power, who formerly worked for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, David Lochbaum, the co-author of Fukushima, The Story of a Nuclear Disaster, joins us to discuss his terrifying account of a very real event that could happen here. And joining us now is Nada Hashemi, who is the director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the Joseph Korbel School for International Studies at the University of Denver. He is the author of Islam, Secularism, and Liberal Democracy, Towards the Democratic Theory for Muslim Societies, and The People Reloaded, The Green Movement, and the Struggle for Iran's Future. His latest book is The Syria Dilemma, and he has an article at the New York Times with Danny Postel, Use Force to Save Starving Syrians. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nada Hashemi.
Happy to be with you.
And some 800,000 civilians are currently under siege in areas around the cities of Homs, Aleppo, and in parts of Damascus. And this is a deliberate policy on the part of the Assad regime. These are what they call starvation sieges, where people are subsisting on grass and weeds. And the UN has recently been able to get some people out, but they have been subject to sniper fire and mortar attacks. And then with the groups that they've gotten out, some 300 men and boys have been detained. What do we know about the fate of them?
Well, we don't have exact information, but anyone who is familiar with the human rights record of Assad will realize and should realize that they're not faring very well. Most likely they're being tortured, most likely they're being beaten, most likely they're going to end up dead. And this is, I think, just highlights the tragedy of the conflict in Syria, the tragedy of what we've been witnessing for the last 3 years, and the complete failure of the international community to really do anything seriously and substantively to intervene, to alleviate the suffering of the Syrian people.
Well, on Monday, Russia and China failed to attend a meeting in New York of the UN Security Council, which was the French are trying to get a resolution together calling for greater access for humanitarian aid to these starving, besieged populations. When you, in the New York Times, along with your co-author Danny Postel, talk about the use of force to save starving Syrians, that, of course, will inevitably come up against a Russian and or a Chinese veto, which has been the record so far.
That's correct. There's a longer history here. You know, there was a presidential statement, which is sort of a weaker sort of type of document that the UN Security Council sometimes issues. Back in October, this issue of the humanitarian crisis that was, emerging then, winter was coming, and, the Security Council got together and tried to sort of discuss this issue. And at the time, Russia strongly opposed any sort of forceful resolution that had teeth. that would sort of try and, you know, suggest some sort of coercive measures to make sure that people can eat. And at the time they said, look, now is not appropriate. I'm talking about October. The Russians insisted it was inappropriate to sort of talk about anything serious, forceful, and substantive. Just on the this past weekend, when a draft resolution began to be circulated once again, dealing with the question of the humanitarian crisis in Syria, Russia again objected in saying that, look, now is not the time. One has to ask, you know, Vladimir Putin and the Russian team at the United Nations, well, when is the appropriate time? I mean, the big difference between October, when this issue was first raised, and Russia vetoed any serious attempt to intervene, and today, when they are again vetoing and obfuscating any international action on Syria, the difference is that tens of thousands of Syrians have died in the interim. And that is the consequence of, I think, Vladimir Putin's really morally obscene posture toward the crisis in Syria. And so Danny and I wrote a piece over the weekend saying, look, Vladimir Putin needs to be challenged, and whether tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Syrians are able to eat or not should not be dependent on the whims and wishes of Vladimir Putin and his ally in Damascus.
But already, of course, there was a threat of force over the use of chemical weapons. At the last minute, President Obama reversed himself, and that became the basis of then followed a Russian and Iranian brokered deal to get rid of Assad's weapons, which everybody's celebrated, including Secretary of State and President Obama. However, we learn that only 4% of these chemical of Assad's arsenals have been accounted for. So that deal, it looks like we've been had on that deal, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there was a state. There was an unconfirmed sort of, you know, off the record report last week that Secretary of State John Kerry, in a meeting with several of his colleagues in the Senate, where he used to work, has sort of come forward and said, you know, if you put it all together, international policy on Syria, U.S. policy on Syria has been a failure. One has been this whole question of chemical weapons. About 5% have been removed from the country. On top of that, it's pretty clear to anyone who has eyes that the Geneva process is not going to go anywhere because of its inherent structural flaws. And now we have sort of the spread of Al-Qaeda throughout a large chunk of Syria and in the Middle East, posing a major security threat, not only to, you know, the region, but now increasingly to Europe and the United States, as revealed and indicated in several statements over the last week by the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, and also the head of Homeland Security. So you put it all together, it's a disaster that is getting worse by the day. And I think the chemical weapons deal that was celebrated was just, as we can see now looking back, really just a distraction, because it didn't deal with the root causes of the Syrian conflict. It actually strengthened Assad. This is going to continue until there's a shift in policy, which is why we were motivated to sort of write this op-ed piece to sort of suggest, look, you know, we may not be able to sort of at this moment deal with the complexities of a political settlement in Syria, but surely the world can come together and agree on sort of a basic moral right that people should have the right to eat, to feed themselves. And if Assad is going to deny hundreds of thousands of his own citizens the right to eat, well, then the international community should use coercive measures to break these sieges, to break these blockades, and to challenge Assad's kneel or starve policy.
Again, I'm speaking with Nada Hashemi, who is the director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the Joseph Korbel School for International Studies at the University of Denver. His latest book is The Syria Dilemma, and he has an article at the New York Times with Danny Postel, Use Force to Save Starving Syrians. But I think surely, though, given what happened with President Obama reversing himself and the bizarre statements from Secretary Kerry suggesting that the punitive strikes against Assad for using chemical weapons against his own population would be, I think, incredibly small, I think, to quote what he said. We know from that period the Joint Chiefs were not happy about it. The U.S. military is weary. They've been in two losing wars. They've gotten out of one in Iraq, and they're getting out of another one in Afghanistan. The American people are weary. I think the Congress was pretty reluctant. I think the president saw that and decided to bring them in on it, and then at the last minute cancel these incredibly small attacks. So just looking at the idea that somebody's going to come to the rescue of the Syrian people, it just is pretty bleak, isn't it? I mean, what leads you to think? I mean, maybe Obama and Hollande are talking about it in this state visit of the French president, since the French seem to be the ones that are outraged about what's happening. But I don't see the American people particularly concerned about the fate of Syrians.
No, you're right. They haven't been concerned, but I think there are new developments since the chemical weapons attack and the major debate that we had in this country on Syria, you know, last August, early September. And I think one of the big, you know, changes, number one, is that the humanitarian crisis has gotten much worse. Approximately 40% of Syria's population are internally displaced, or they've been turned into refugees. Over 100,000 people, according to the most conservative estimates, have been killed. You know, there's now sort of, to quote the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Nabi Pelli, there's, quote, massive evidence that points direct finger to the highest levels of the Syrian regime for perpetrating state-sanctioned war crimes and crimes against humanity. There was those photographs that were smuggled out of Syria showing industrial-scale killings and tortures within Syria's prison system, and now there's a starvation crisis. So the moral and ethical stakes at the heart of the Syrian conflict have always been there. They've gotten worse. People can see it. But on top of that, now Syria, as I indicated before, has become a security crisis, an emerging security crisis for the world, particularly for the Western world. Al-Qaeda now, according to one leading Al-Qaeda expert, you know, controls a swath of territory in the heart of the Middle East that stretches 400 miles wide. Europe is very concerned about the fact that there are now over 1,000 young marginalized Muslim men who have left various European countries to join radical Islamist groups. What will happen when they go back? There was an article in the New York Times how the Syrian conflict is now resonating and affecting Indonesia for similar reasons. The leaders of the American intelligence communities and Homeland Security Department are now sort of sounding the alarm bell, saying, look, as a direct result of the Syrian conflict, we are seeing this emerging threat that is a big concern. And so perhaps people in Washington who haven't been and never really were persuaded by the ethical and moral stakes at the heart of the Syrian conflict might be willing to take a second look at this tragedy because of the direct threat that Syria is now posing to Western security interests. I'm talking about threats within the homeland here in the United States and in Europe. So I think from that perspective, there is new developments that might force the international community to take the Syrian conflict take a much more seriously, because as I said, it's not simply about Syria and the Middle East today. Now it's affecting the entire world.
But now, Ashmi, the Saudis apparently have had second thoughts about their funding these jihadis and allowing their own citizens to go. They've just passed a law against anybody going off to fight jihad in Syria. And they appear to actually be genuinely concerned about blowback, even though they've been cynically exporting their jihadis for decades, and they did so in Afghanistan. Turkey's leader is preoccupied with domestic problems he has. He sort of lost his zeal, I think, for intervention. And as I say, the U.S. doesn't seem to want to do anything. And only France seems to be concerned. I'm just wondering if there is a, you know, something deeply cynical going on here, that everybody's just sort of waiting for these people to exhaust each other Meanwhile, if you can look at the photographs of what's happening, apart from the humanitarian, the disgraceful humanitarian situation, which, you know, should be getting the world's attention. If you just look at pictures, these cities are devastated. I mean, this country is being destroyed before our eyes.
You're right. I think there has been an unstated sort of attitude among many people, particularly within the Obama administration, and particularly Obama himself, an almost deep desire to see the Syria conflict move away, wither away. Obama has wanted to, according to his stated positions, to pivot to Asia. When he looks at Syria, he looks at Syria through the prism of Iraq. So do a lot of American citizens. That's completely understandable. But I think those two conflicts are very different, and I think the solutions to how one can and should deal with those two countries are very different. But the point here is that despite the desire after 3 years to hope that Syria will go away, Syria keeps dragging the entire world back to its territory, and including President Obama, to think that this is simply going to solve itself and not affect the region, which it clearly is. All of the neighboring countries are destabilized, but now it's becoming a security problem for the entire world. So I think that demands a serious engagement with the question of Syria. I think fundamentally, until the United States decides to shift policy, I don't see the countries that you mentioned, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, or any other regional countries paying attention or doing anything substantively or constructive in terms of trying to solve the conflict. The Geneva process is effectively a joke. No one takes it seriously, largely because the inherent structural flaws in Geneva sort of presuppose that Assad is going to send his team to Geneva to negotiate his own disempowerment. That's not going to happen unless there's a changing set of factors on the ground, changing battlefield conditions that will force, I think, Assad and his side to negotiate much more seriously. So you're right, it doesn't look good. But the more that the world sort of just stands on the sidelines, the more the humanitarian crisis gets worse. And the security crisis, as we're now seeing, according to the leaders of the American intelligence community, is now starting to affect directly the security of Europe and the security of the United States. So perhaps for this latter reason, I'm hoping that there's going to be a recognition that, taking seriously, challenging the Russian position on Syria is in America's national interests. It's not simply a question of ethics and morality, but this is something that has to be dealt with in a much more serious way. And hoping and wishing that it'll go away is not a policy. It's wishful thinking, and it's not going to happen. So I think for all of those reasons, it's pretty clear in the report that I just mentioned that Secretary Kerry himself, one of the architects of U.S. policy in Syria, according to recent reports, has given up and has admitted defeat. So that, I think, suggests a deeper soul searching within the heart of the Obama administration. It remains to be seen whether anything will happen, but it's pretty clear that ignoring Syria and hoping that it'll go away is not going to solve this problem.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Nader Hashemi.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Again, I've been speaking with Nader Hashemi, who's the director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. And his latest book is The Syria Dilemma. And he has an article at the New York Times with Danny Postel, Use Force to Save Starving Syrians. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into the catastrophic ice storms hitting the south in the context of increasingly extreme weather events happening across the globe.